On today's insights, how can you fix your staffing firm's online reputation? How might you measure the impact of your social media efforts? And we share data from a recent case study on programmatic job advertising. Today's episode is brought to you by Haley Marketing. Right now, we're offering two great deals. First, Google Mastery, where we'll get you to the top of search results and on more than 2 million websites in Google's advertising network. And second, our social visibility that includes custom blog writing, our award-winning social pro services, and reputation management. Plus, free videos and free monthly social media training for your staff. To learn more about these two great deals from Haley Marketing, you can give us a call at 888-696-2900. This is Insights.
Welcome to Insights. Tips and best practices from the insiders at Haley Marketing. Insights will provide you with the tools you need to master your social media, digital marketing, and employer branding. Your hosts for Insights are Brad Biley and Matt Lozar.
What's up? This is Brad Biley, and welcome back to another episode of Insights, the podcast built to help you with your recruitment and digital marketing. As always, I'm joined by Haley Marketing's Director of Recruitment Marketing. He's Matt Lozar. Matt, how are we doing this week?
Hi, Brad. We're in February. February's a grind, I feel like. Even though it's the shortest month of the year, when you live in the Northeast, it's the hardest month of the year.
I agree. It's a long month. It is a leap year, though, so it's a little bit longer than usual. Facts only on Insights. And it is a long month, though. I agree.
It's tough because you're getting through winter.
Yep.
I'm sick of it.
That's what it is. It's the Buffalo February.
It might be the Northeast February.
Correct.
And in March, we have Hope Springs Eternal. So from the sports aspect, though, if you are a sports fan and you know baseball at all, there are pitchers and catchers reporting to their practices to get ready for the start of the baseball season this week. If you're a sports fan, that'll help you. If you're not a sports fan, just know warmer weather is coming.
And Matt, it's one day closer to golf season.
Sure is, pal.
All right, let's get to the show.
Content Blueprint.
How can you fix your staffing firm's online reputation? When we look at staffing and recruiting firms across the industry, one thing continues to be prevalent. That's negative reputations, negative online reviews for the staffing and recruiting industry. And when we think about it at its core, there's really a fundamental reason why staffing firms have that negative reputation. If you think about yourself trying to fill one active role on your job board, ultimately, one individual gets that opportunity. In most situations, maybe you're handling a warehouse assignment for multiple, but in most situations, you have a job listing, 100 people apply, one person gets the job. Matt, that leaves 99 people that are now frustrated that they didn't get the opportunity. 99 people that can now go to a site like Google or Yelp or Glassdoor or Facebook and leave that negative feedback. So we as an industry have to mitigate that risk. We as an industry need to work on our online reputation, on our employer brand, and actively generate those positive reviews. So Matt, you're a staffing owner. You have a 2.3 on Google. How do you fix your staffing firm's online reputation? Where do you get started?
The first place I would start is looking at those reviews, because the quickest way we're going to change those reviews and get more 3, 4, 5-star reviews is maybe there's a problem with our candidate experience. You know, I know of a physician's office that has a low Google star reviews, and the problem isn't service of the physicians, the doctors, their clinical staff. It's that non-clinical staff, the people that answer the phones, the people that handle the billing. Those are the people on the front lines that are leaving a negative reputation. So maybe at your staffing agency, look at those reviews and see if there's a common thread you can fix today.
And that's challenging to do. If you're looking at online reviews and you're thinking about your organization, you're instinctively going to have a positive mentality about your organization. It's a second family to you at times, right? But as Matt's saying, it's evaluating that process. What are individuals saying consistently on a site like Google or on a site like Facebook? And how can you evaluate your candidate experience? How can you evaluate what your team is doing so that you can have a standardized process that leads to a positive experience?
So to collect the more positive reviews, the number one thing we here at Haley Marketing would say is ask. ask people to leave positive reviews because, as you said, if we're playing the numbers game, there's one happy person and 99 unhappy people or some large number. On top of that, most people are chronic complainers, especially online, and they will go to complain about bad service, bad anything on Yelp, Indeed, Google, Facebook, instead of going on there to say, hey, you know, John or Susie in, you know, the staffing agency or recruiter's office, they were awesome for me and really helped me get to work, find the schedule I need, find a transportation location that, you know, I could get to and from work. But you have to ask a lot of the times, and to implement that type of system is very helpful.
Yeah, so what you might do is start with the candidates that you have on assignment right now, or rather the associates that you have on assignment right now. Shoot them a quick email or shoot them a text and say, hey, how's your experience going? How's your current job? How's your current role? How is everything while you're out on this assignment? Knowing that they're having a good experience. So we want to first reach out to those people that are bound to leave us positive feedback. From there, we're going to ask for their feedback and we're going to drive them to that review site that might be lacking. So if you have a 4.2 review on Facebook and a 2.8 on Google, it would be our recommendation to drive those reviews to Google. Say, hey, Brad, I hear you're having a great opportunity. You're having a great experience at XYZ. Would you mind taking the time to leave us a positive review on Google? Drive them that one way. I think that's a great idea, Matt. And I think we actually said on Insights at one point that 88% of people are likely to leave online feedback if prompted to do so. You just need to ask.
We did it here at Haley Marketing last year. We, you know, one of our challenges was we had like 5 reviews total.
Correct.
And good and bad, you know, but when we went out and asked our clients to do that, like I never met resistance. Like some emails just didn't get returned. It happens, but everyone was like, yeah, great. Well, we're happy to leave you a review. So just asking helped.
Yeah. And I think we ended up generating 130, 135, something right around there. And to Matt's point, it's a short email of, hey, do you mind taking 2 minutes out of your afternoon to leave us a quick review or a brief review? We really value your partnership. We value you as an individual. We'd love to hear how you're doing on this assignment so that others could be like you, so that others can see themselves in this opportunity.
And I think one last thing to talk about in this segment, and you do a very good job of answering this question, so I'm going to set it up for you here, is, hey, Brad, when we have a negative online review, what should I do? Because that's a question our team gets a lot here at Haley Marketing.
Yeah, so the last thing you want to do is ignore that negative feedback. So if you're a staffing firm owner and you're listening right now, or you have a independent recruiting practice and you have negative reviews online, the last thing that you want to do is ignore them. What you want to do is, straight out of a book called Hug Your Haters by Jay Baer, is follow a rule of two. Someone leaves negative feedback, you're going to respond. You're going to say, Brad, I'm sorry you had a negative experience. We strive to provide world-class service, and it seems like we fell short. We'd love to have a quick conversation with you to correct this. Give us a call at the office and list the phone number. We don't want to have that follow-up come online. We want to drive that individual to a phone call or a private email. If they come back and they say, I don't want to talk to you. I had a negative experience. I had negative time. I'm sure they'll use some stronger language than that. We want to follow up a second time. Brad, as we said, we strive to provide world-class service, and it seems like we fell short. We would love to have a quick conversation. Can I maybe meet you for a coffee, or do you want to give me a call at the office? Again, leave your phone number. If they follow up a third time, at that point, we're going to let it go. It takes a long time to build that online reputation, and the last thing that we want to do is get into a shouting match with a disgruntled candidate or client or prospect or individual. So we're going to respond twice. We're going to try to get that follow-up to come via call or email. We don't want to get into a shouting match on a review site. And if that individual follows up a third time, we're going to let it go. We're going to leave it at that. There's also one other point that I want to make. Many review sites, Facebook specifically, allows you to set up what's considered page moderation, which blocks profanity. If at any point you have negative language, aggressive language, abusive language on your review page, you do have the right to block that or to remove that. Now, I wouldn't recommend just removing a negative review or a negative piece of feedback. We want to use that as an opportunity to learn, to grow, to respond. But if someone is using abusive language, you do have the right to take that down, and you do have ways to set up parameters to block that from happening. If you need help building your online reputation, we would love to chat. You can give us a call at 888-696-2900. to learn about our reputation management services at Haley Marketing.
Social reach.
How might you measure the impact of your social media efforts? You know, at Haley Marketing, we have a social pro product where we're actively monitoring and responding to and driving traffic for upwards of 120 different staffing firms through social media. And as we look at the ROI from that social pro product, what we're constantly looking at is what value and what metric should we be tracking. So Matt and I wanted to bring this to Insights because we wanted to talk about what you should be tracking as you look at social media in 2020. Matt, I'm going to get us started. And I'm going to say at a high level, it starts with understanding what the goal is. You can't understand what metrics to track without knowing what you're trying to accomplish. You need to know what you're trying to use social media for before you start to say, oh, we need to measure X.
You set me up perfectly and have no idea what I wrote down during the last segment.
I'm excited.
But it's a quote from Peter Drucker. I think he was a long, very smart business mind from years past. If you can't measure it, you can't improve it.
I agree.
And with social media, there is so many different areas we can dig into here. And I think it goes back to that goal. And it could be reach and engagement. It could be views. It could be growing your audience. And it could just be applications back to a landing page or a capture form, a contact us form on your website. So there's a bunch of different ways we can go with this.
Yeah, and with social media, we need to think about the social media landscape as well. Social media is a great opportunity to improve your employer brand, to get in front of new potential clients, new potential prospects. So there is a level of metric that we want to track in just the form of impressions and views. Who is seeing your company on social media? How many individuals are seeing your brand?
It's the same tactic what we're measuring, impressions and views, and now I think it's actually better than the billboards, the radio ads, the newspaper ads that were from decades past.
Absolutely. If you think about somebody driving down the highway in the passenger seat, 99% of people are on their iPhone on Facebook. They're not looking at the billboards. So I would absolutely rather run Facebook ads or content as that new modern billboard than pay the $20,000 to get my billboard ad on the thruway.
Incredibly cost effective. The cost per thousand metric is going to be lower than the billboard that you have on the thruway, you know, in a wherever it is locally. And that's where you get that views and impressions. And that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is the engagement with your ads. It's, are people clicking on it? Are people commenting? Are people sharing? What are they doing once they see your content?
Yeah, and I want to talk about that real briefly because it's something that I'm increasingly passionate about. We have content that is rather sensitive. In the staffing and recruiting industry, we're talking about how individuals can get their next job opportunity, how individuals can improve their career. When we think about the content that we're putting out, instinctively, people are more cautious about clicking share, about commenting on it, especially in an ecosystem where people are passively looking for work. If I'm passively looking for work, I'm not going to comment on a blog post about how to improve my resume. I'm going to consume it. I'm going to read it. I'm going to steal the tips. And then I'm going to go on my way. So as a staffing and recruiting firm, yes, we want to look at those engagement metrics like Matt's talking about, but I wouldn't put a strong emphasis on that strictly because those key metrics of likes, comments, and shares around our content, they're not going to happen. We want to look at clicks. We want to look at reads and page views and things like that. But, you know, engagement in the form of comments on blog posts that are sensitive like that, I'm just not seeing it.
That's an interesting perspective and one I think I agree with. It makes a whole heck of a lot of sense because if Brad or Matt are looking for a job, we're not going to comment on it because we don't want people to see it. It's why LinkedIn created its, you know, are you open to new jobs feature. Only recruiters can see this.
Yep.
You can make it public, I believe, but that's where it's kind of a private thing to where only recruiters have access to send you jobs or in-mails or other types of content. So how does this come into play, though? If people aren't going to comment on it, do you think it's important then to grow that audience? Will people like a page or follow a page if, you know, it's a local staffing agency or a local, you know, company careers page that's sharing content? Is that too far for them? Because I think growing audiences is very important.
Yep.
It's important to have 10,000 people follow your page versus 1,000.
Sure. the larger the audience, the more people that you can actively talk to. If you think about going to a networking event, if there's two people in the room, you have a heck of a lot easier chance to, you know, talk to those two people. There's 100 people in the room, you now have 100 leads. It's different. It's a bigger pool. When we think about social media, yes, we want to actively grow the amount of followers on our page. We can do that through ads. We can do that through great content. As we look at staffing and recruiting firms, I have yet to see, and we have yet to see, really a drop-off of potential individuals following pages. And we see like counts continuing to grow up, page likes. People aren't afraid of that. But I do think that people are afraid to click like or comment on a piece of sensitive content like that. It doesn't mean they're not reading it. We have more than enough data that supports that individuals are reading great content that the staffing industry puts out. But it's the commenting on it and the sharing of it that I think people get sensitive about. And there's another point here too, Matt, that I'm kind of thinking through as we're talking. Maybe people are embarrassed to share that kind of content. Maybe it's assumed that if I'm in my, you know, mid to late 20s, I should know how to put together a resume. I should know how much I'm worth and how much I should be valued at in my role. So yeah, I want to read that content for personal development and I want to improve myself, but maybe I don't want my friends and family to know that I don't know how to put together this resume. So as a staffing firm, you're still doing a great service by putting out this content. You're helping the end user, but we need to think through their user behavior. What are they going to do when they see this content?
So to wrap up this segment, it's, you know, we obviously will have a lot of impressions and views and we want to measure, you know, the clicks and the how that works and what type of content, you know, is getting viewed the most or getting clicked on the most and, you know, driving content or traffic back to your website. So at the end of the day, it does come back to your goals and it comes down to what do you want to accomplish business wise? And that's really how you should center your social media efforts and center the measuring of those efforts.
And that's what makes a good social media strategy. It's having those goals and making sure that your strategies and your tactics align with those goals. That's what makes a great marketer as opposed to just somebody posting stuff on social media.
Seen and heard.
All right, Matt, we're going to talk about programmatic job advertising and specifically a recent case study that you've put together for Haley Marketing. Before we get into the case study, Matt, I'm going to ask that you walk us through programmatic job advertising. What is it and why should we care?
It's been a while since we've talked programmatic job advertising on Insights. Brad's taken over the content strategy.
Yes. We're bringing it back, though.
We are bringing it back. And programmatic job advertising is it's essentially trying to get the most out of your recruitment budget. It's making it, you know, faster, more effective, less expensive. It's making sure you're advertising on the right job boards. It's making sure you're advertising on the right jobs. Making sure you actually have more control over that budget, over those jobs. And the quote unquote two word phrase I've stolen is thoughtful automation. Because I feel like automation gets people a little scared, just like the word programmatic does. Sure. But if we're thinking about it in a way we want to automate it the right way, which we'll talk about in this case study, it can work very well. And just we've seen it be just the job spend of staffing agencies is inefficient and we want to make it more efficient, which has been kind of the mantra of Haley Marketing over the past 20 plus years.
Inefficient, how so? Inefficient in just spending too much money or spending it in the wrong places?
Let's talk about the case study. It's actually a perfect example. So we have three case studies recently from our first year of programmatic on Haley Marketing, HaleyMarketing.com. And
we can link to those in the show notes.
Sure can. And this one talks about a construction staffing agency all throughout the Southeast, starting to, you know, grow it out to Texas, Ohio, some other states, Arizona, etc. And they have a budget, you know, let's say, you know, their monthly budget. And they were just advertising it on four or five job boards with no direction.
Indeed, ZipRecruiter, job boards like that.
But also on any of their jobs. It wasn't earmarked or allocated towards certain jobs. And for this construction agency, they could get as many general labor jobs as they want.
Okay.
They were having trouble getting that skilled trades positions, those plumbers, those sheet metal techs, those electricians. So what we did was we refined that budget. And in the first month, you know, we didn't really do anything. We let the data play out and, you know, we jump on our calls and they're like, Matt, This is taking up too much of our budget. It used up 17% of our budget. We don't need to use that much of our budget on general labor positions. So in the next month, which was September, we made an adjustment. And the general labor positions only used 4% of the monthly budget, which is great. We kept the monthly budget the same overall. What that led to was 85 more applications on their skilled trade positions.
Perfect.
That's exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to make sure we were advertising on the right jobs.
At no additional cost.
No additional job spend. The job spend budget stayed the same. So we went from 17% of the budget on general labor positions to 4% of the budget on general labor positions. So now 96% of their budget was on the jobs they wanted to. They got 85 more applications. The budget, the application increase was 22%. They're happy because anybody's going to apply for a general labor job in the construction industry. That's what we've learned. It's a fairly non-skilled job that doesn't require certifications or other hard skills, and we use the programmatic software to make it more efficient.
What was the two-word phrase you said? Strategic automation?
Thoughtful.
Thoughtful automation. I like that a lot. You know, when we think about the industry and in the market that we're in right now with record low unemployment, you need to be very strategic and very thoughtful, rather, with the applications that you're receiving. You know, not only is it just too many applications for one given role, it ends up bogging down your team, right? If you have 100 applications and you can fill that job on your own, you don't need all those. It's just clutter at that point. It's a cluttered inbox.
It's wasting job spend because they're not going through applications. Like when we're going through these calls with clients and prospects, they're like, our team has applications they don't even go through that they're paying for. That's the problem.
That's a waste.
It is. And it's just finding ways to you know, like the right jobs, the right job boards, because I'm sure there's also people listening to this podcast that have that end of the problem, but they also have a lot of unfilled job orders or not getting applications. How can you get that budget over there quickly? Because that's what you need.
So you have your budget. You understand programmatic might be the solution. Where do we get started?
If you need help with that job advertising and managing the spend and looking for recommendations, contact Haley Marketing, 888-696-2900. Send us an email at info@haleymarketing.com, and we'll be happy to chat and find out how we can help.
Yeah, and from there, you can talk with Matt. You could talk with our team of marketing educators to understand your need, understand your goals, and understand how you can better manage that job board spend so that you're more effective and more efficient. That's our show, and thank you for listening to another episode of Insights. If you found this episode valuable, we ask that you please tell just one coworker about it this week. Have a question for us? You could tweet us at Haley Marketing and let us know what you're thinking, or email info@haleymarketing.com. And of course, if you need a hand with your marketing or recruitment marketing initiatives, we would love to help. You could check out haleymarketing.com to get in touch with our team of marketing educators. For my podcast partner, Matt Lozar, this is Brad Biley. We'll see you next time.